Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., 1 a.m. on Monday mornings, and we stream live at richarddugan.com, newspress.com. We also archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we thank you so much for taking time out of, for all of us, seems to be busy schedules to tune in and gather information and get informed by our guests, who we also link to. They are linked to on both the schedules page prior to their the broadcast, but they're also on the radio show's page in perpetuity, if you will, for posterity and beyond. And we hope that you will avail yourselves of what they have to offer, because 99.9% of the time, hey, it's going to resonate with you in some way, shape, or form, I think. So please check them out. We encourage you to do so, including our guest today. Very interesting subject that we're going to be getting into with our guest and the author, if you will. I guess it would be more appropriate to say the co-compiler of a book entitled What Wags the Dog? And we would hope that you would check that out. It is Tales of Conscious Awakening. It's a collection of about 37 individuals, some of them you may know, authors and filmmakers who are sharing their insights, their wisdom, and so forth. And my guest is one of the co-authors or compilers, Miriam Knight. I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me, Richard. And if I might just correct the title, it's What Wags the World.
No, that's right. I forgot about it. There's a movie, something along those lines, and I was trying to figure out the connection, which we'll get into maybe if there is even one. What Wags the World is the title of the book, and we do hope that you'll check that out. By the way, the website, before we go any further, is whatwagstheworld.com. Whatwagstheworld, all one word, .com. Again, it is Tales of Conscious Awakening, and your co-author, Miriam Knight, your co-author is Julie Clayton. And
that's
you
right.
You two basically are involved in a you have multiple websites, I've noticed. There's a review a website that you have where you're running a publishing company as well, but you also have reviews of the various different works that you put out or that are put out, published, and we encourage people to investigate that as well. That, to me, that's fascinating as well, and maybe we'll get into that as well. Let's talk a little bit about this particular endeavor, because I think it's rather fascinating from the standpoint of people who are wanting to and trying to understand who we are, where we are, why we are, and where we're going. I mean, the basic ultimate questions that everyone seems to ask as they come into this world, and how you felt that it was necessary or important, I should say, to seek out these, in particular, these 37 people. I suppose how you chose them, I mean, because my goodness, there are so many. I mean, you'd have a book the size of War and Peace before it was all said and done if you tried to touch base with a lot of the notables who are out there. And some might say, well, wait a minute, but there's so many others that you left out. You know, some I know, some that I know that aren't in your book that I would have loved to have heard from. So tell me, how did this endeavor come about?
Well, as you mentioned, New Consciousness Review, which is my magazine and website, it's also my radio show. And for the past 6 years on the radio show and 15 years as a publisher, I have been interviewing the great and the good and reviewing their books. And as you know, Richard, I'm sure you get a lot of pitches from authors. You get these themes coming across in waves. And one of the themes that I really resonated with were these themes of conscious awakening, how people from so many different walks of life, what we would call mainstream, suddenly started seeing other dimensions and believing in, I guess, what you would call magic or intuition. And so I thought that I would go and get their stories by asking them all the same three questions and compile them into a book. That's what we did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's rather interesting because we have a propensity here on this program since we've been doing this in September of 2007 of asking the same three questions at the end of the program, which you're going to have an opportunity to answer. So I'm very curious as to what, if we can talk about the three questions that you put forth to these folks, including one in particular that we've had on numerous times on this program, Greg Braden. He's also a part of the compilation of the work that you have put together in What Wags the Dog.
What Wags the World.
I did it again, didn't I?
No,
What Wags the World.
It's my fault because I cannot resist a pun, so I called it Tales of Conscious Awakening, and so you kind of subliminally make the connection.
I fell into your trap, did I not? And I'm looking right at it. I've got it up on my screen. What Wags the World, Tales of Conscious Awakening. So tell us, can you share with us the three questions?
Of course. The first question is, was there an event in your life that caused you to change your perception of the nature of reality? The second question was, what was the insight that you got as a result, and how did that change your life? And then the third question, not so much a question, but an invitation, do you have a message for the reader? Mm. And by asking the same three questions to people from such different backgrounds, we really got a very fascinating range of responses that kind of cover the waterfront from people who kind of got into it kicking and screaming, and people who have seen energies and angels and auras since they were babies.
Hmm. Yeah, my mother asked me some 10 or 15 years ago if I ever had any, I guess the word she used was supernatural experiences. Now, the thing about using that particular word is that you could say spiritual or esoteric. You could even use the word paranormal. And I'm wondering if that falls into the same category as what we're talking about here. Is that one of those areas? It's not one that we've really gone into much on this program, but something tells me that, you know, that's part of it. That's a word that will describe it as well.
Well, I heard a wonderful talk by Julia Cameron, who stated boldly that paranormal is the new normal. And I think that if you look at what's happening on television, for example, stuff that used to be considered fringe, even 10 or 15 years ago, is now mainstream. I remember seeing John Edwards at 11 o'clock on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yes.
And then he moved to mainstream,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you have movies like The Mentalist and Ghost Whisperer and so on. And these actually, a couple of people in the book served as either the models for these characters or as advisors to the television shows.
Wow. That is indeed extraordinary because it's one of those areas where, and for myself, I worked for a Christian radio station from about 1980, 81 until 1995. And back then, this stuff that we're talking about today, oh, you're talking beyond the fringe. It was outside the walls of the universe from their perspective.
And yet, in evangelical circles, you have speaking in tongues. What is that but spirit possession?
Yes. Now, I had an interesting experience. Well, I shouldn't say that I had this experience, but I sort of elicited the experience. This was actually on an Easter Sunday. The family was at our house. We'd all gathered, and my sisters were in the back room with my mother, and they were doing what was called scanning. They were running their hands above the body surface and just scanning and being aware of the sensations. And I just happened to go back there because I wondered where all the women had gone. And the next thing I knew, they said, lay down on the bed. And so I did. Now, I have a sister who is of a particular denomination that if it ain't in the book, it doesn't exist. And my mother had her scan over my body, and she described what she experienced. And over my throat in particular, she began to feel heat in her hands. And I have no idea whether that, because I haven't had that much conversation with her over these kinds of subjects, just because I know where she's coming from. And the real irony is that she and I both grew up Catholic. And in Catholicism, there's mysticism, there's miracles, there's all this kind of stuff that you read about. And yet here she was in this denomination that, if the Bible doesn't say it, then it doesn't exist. And if it does speak about it, okay, we can talk about it. And I've always thought that was really kind of an interesting juxtaposition. But the bottom line for me was in that experience was the fact that at least, I have to give her credit for this, at least she was willing to experience that. At least she was willing to do it. Now, what she did with that, I don't know. And in a way, that's kind of what we do with this program, is we put this information out there, and I don't know what people are going to do with it. But there it is. So when we talk about these, and we'll call them experiences, these transformative experiences that these folks that you spoke with and asked these three questions responded to, because you and I are probably of the same ilk, same mindset, was there anything there that really surprised you?
Richard, nothing surprises me anymore. But certainly intrigued me. One story of Paul von Ward, it was particularly fascinating, because Paul grew up in a very of that ilk, background. In fact, he was trained for the ministry. He was actually in line to go on the speaking circuit with Billy Graham. And he ended up going he first had this kind of rational, very, very bright. He, even though he grew up in a sharecropper's cabin, he was off the charts bright. And he started asking questions in Sunday school, like, what about somebody who has never heard of Jesus, who lives in a darkest Africa? If he doesn't accept Jesus as his savior, would he be damned? That doesn't seem very fair. And, that kind of questioning took him into the Navy, and then it eventually led him into the State Department. And he was just one of these open minds who had to understand. And he started reading about everything from I guess being in the State Department, he was in government and in the military. He also was privy to other information that us mere mortals aren't. And he started investigating UFOs and things like that. And this is a man who came to it just through the rational process of saying, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense, this holds together, this doesn't hold water. Other people have had dark nights of the soul where they hit the wall and they just can't go on in life. And they finally surrender and they say, God, what do you want from me? I can't go any further.
Yeah.
And it seems that when you really open up your heart absolutely with no defenses, that God or spirit or creator or angels or whatever you want to call it answers. Other people, maybe their mother, their grandmother tends to go down the female line, but not always, was intuitive. And from earliest childhood, they were able to have a knowing about what was going to happen. In some cases, it freaks the parents out, and the parents, come down on them and they shut it down. In other cases, they're encouraged. Those are the more unusual cases. But this seems to be an ability that we are all born with. And it is up to us to open ourselves to these possibilities and allow the information to come through, because the kind of overall sense that I get from all of these interviews in the many different ways, is that God, the universe, angels, whatever you, you know, however you want to conceive of it, are always trying to speak to you, or communicate with you, help you. You are never alone. And you come into this life to experience in ways that you actually have collaborated in setting out the curriculum, if you will, laying the groundwork. And the universe doesn't give you more than you can handle. They say that what doesn't break you makes you stronger. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that you get through this and you learn, you soldier through this, and then you arrive at a new level in your life with greater power and greater abilities to handle life, to be in the world, to do in the world, to give your gifts to the world. This is what it's all about.
Does there seem to be, from your perspective, this constant theme running through all of this, that there's this concern on the part of a lot of folks, and you mentioned it, this almost a fear of being alone, not just in terms of in the universe, but I mean, in a matter of speaking, we don't come into this world alone, because usually, at least, at the very least, the mother is there. And in many instances, even though we must travel our own journey, even when we depart this life, hopefully, there are people around us as we ascend or, you know, transition, however you want to phrase that. But do you get that sense, that aspect? And maybe it is fear, but it's a huge concern on a lot of folks that they're alone.
You know, I think the best way I can understand it is to take a look at some people who have had near-death experiences. When they cross to the other side, they have this sensation of being enveloped in absolute love, in an indescribable sense of peace and wonder and happiness. And then when they're pushed back into their lives, often into broken bodies and pain and whatever, but they have this sense of loss at the separation from the source of love. Now, in life today, particularly in Western cultures, even the most well-meaning parents, and unfortunately not all parents are the most well-meaning parents, they feel this sense of obligation to train you to live in this world, to function in this world as they see it and understand it. And so there's this discipline, there's telling you to shut down the wonder. You know, you look at a little child and you see this light of wonder at the universe, this bubbling joy, and that light gets turned off all too soon. And I think that's what we lose. So we have this sense of loss, this sense of aloneness. We're no longer connected to that pure, unconditional love. That's what I think it's all about.
Mm. It's an interesting juxtaposition from the other side that, you know, those of us who are here, we see individuals come into this world and we see them go out. And I have to say that one of the most perplexing for me, and I have no way of resolving this in my own mind because it's so monumental, is the number of people who transition that not only we don't know about, but who get no, and maybe this is irrelevant, maybe that's why I can't resolve it, there's no acknowledgement of their transitioning. Mother, father, yeah, I'm certainly, that will be my experience somewhere down the road. My parents are still alive. Brothers and sisters, that's possible too. I have no children, so there's not that. I've experienced it with animals, but then you start broadening your perspective, and you start taking a look at the community in which you live, and then you hear about this. And I don't know why that that touches me in that way, that that seems so sad that no one is acknowledging their departure.
Neil Donald Walsh once said that dying is the most exciting thing you'll ever do in your life. And what he meant was that the transition from physical existence to the other side is going from gray to technicolor, if you will. Hmm. And whether or not you're acknowledged in your passing, the question is, were you acknowledged in your life? Who did you touch in your life? And this is something, I'm sure you've seen these viral videos on YouTube and even movies in Hollywood, where unseen people have this resonance of the people that they have touched. Oh, It's a Beautiful Life. Remember that Christmas classic?
Oh, yeah, It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah, huh?
It's a Wonderful Life. We don't realize the impact that we might have had on others. And that's one of the things that is reported in the near-death experiences, that when you do have your life review, and it's almost universal that they report the life review, you actually see the impact of your life from the point of view of every other person that you have interacted with, particularly the people that you have impacted either negatively or positively.
Wow. And I have to say that because time is a concept that we humans have adopted, for some of us, that could take a long, long time because we've interacted with so many people.
But this is outside of time.
Right? Yes, exactly. And it reminds me of that movie with Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep about his life review. And for whatever reason, he just could not understand the concept that it was a review. This was not a judgment. All they were doing was just reviewing it. That's all. And just giving him a chance to see what he did in his life. But he saw it as a test. I have a funny feeling, though, that if it were me, I probably would feel the same way, because much of my early life, it seemed like every move I made was a test by others, or maybe not so much by others, but, you know, because it was kind of ingrained in me, I made everything a test. Every move and every experience was, did I pass? Did I fail? Did I get it right? You know, instead of, oh, that was a neat experience, you know? And I know that that's an issue that we all struggle with as well, is it's like you said before, we're here to experience the life that we have, I guess from your perspective, we have been given or that we have taken on. As I used to say many years ago, that I don't know who created this life that I live. There are some philosophies that say, I did. Well, okay. If I did, then I'm just here to experience it. And that's why I made all the choices that I did. We are talking with Miriam Knight. She's the co-author of, or co-compiler, co-editor, I guess you might say, of What Wags the World. We encourage you to check out the website by the same name, whatwagstheworld.com. Tales of a Conscious Awakening. And we encourage you to stay with us. We're going to continue our conversation here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Don't go away.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you for staying with us, staying with yours truly, as well as Miriam Knight, the co-editor of the, I think, very intriguing compilation of about 37 different individuals answering these three questions that we talked about in the first segment. The title of the book, What Wags the World? I'm working very consciously at making sure that I get the title of that book correctly. What Wags the World? Tales of Conscious Awakening. And that seems to be a major theme this year, 2016, both for me, my guests, this program is, I mean, it's not that we haven't talked about it before, but it just seems like a real focal point that we want to wake up. We want to, in the best sense of this word, take a more conscious role in the path of our lives. Have you sensed that as well?
Absolutely, Richard. In fact, the spring issue of my magazine, New Consciousness Review, has a very big section on conscious business, as well as being, you know, the sections on health and so on. There, but people are waking up to, I think, the necessity to make very conscious choices in our lives, because we're seeing the tipping points coming at us at a great rate of speed, tipping points in climate, tipping points in social ferment. We've seen, even in this country, the most horrible mass shootings. What kind of psychological crises are going through our population to allow that to happen, to encourage that to happen? Terrorism, economic collapse. And I think that it's these crises that are gifts in disguise, because they're forcing us to look carefully at them and realize our own participation, our own sense of responsibility for creating the situations in which these things can arise. Mahatma Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. We can't fix everything by some magic hand. It all has to start with individual actions on the ground. And this conscious awakening is a recognition that we are all connected to each other and responsible for each other. Yes, I am my brother's keeper. And yes, everything I do has an impact in the world, no matter how small. Every choice I make is creating my reality and my expression in the world. Everything that is in the world was the result of someone's choice.
Mm. And I know that for a lot of folks, that's a real difficult one because of, and I've acknowledged the fact that we've had to go through this process. This country in particular has had to go through the individualistic principles or paradigm, if you will, in order to go to the next level of interconnectedness. What I have found, I don't know about you, what I have found is that we are interdependent on one another. We are interconnected, and that there is nothing that we do or don't do that doesn't have an effect on the world around us. And we may not see it, but it's there. It's just like if you watch the weather patterns as they move around the globe, it's the same thing.
Absolutely.
Do you find that more and more people are beginning to? Is this consciousness, from your perspective, is it growing? Is the planet becoming less of a minority consciousness, and are we getting close to 50% or
Richard,
more?
All you have to do is walk into the supermarket. 5 years ago, would you have seen rows upon rows upon rows of organic produce?
I don't think so.
No. Absolutely not.
And go ahead.
People are absolutely becoming conscious of the effect of their choices.
Hmm. I guess the one thing, too, when we speak about the organic section, the produce, I feel I can trust more than anything that says organic that's been put inside a container. I don't know why, but for some reason I think, oh, they can throw any old label on that thing. They can say whatever they want. And some of them have been found out that it wasn't all natural and it wasn't organic. We used to have chickens, and we were buying this feed that they never said it was organic, but they did say it was all natural. And I remember calling the manufacturer, but I actually called the manufacturer, and I asked the guy, and he says, organics, GMOs, they've been in the system for decades. And I'm going, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're right. There are certain aspects. of our society that have changed so much. And by the way, I don't know about you, but my interactions with young people, and I tend to have them on a weekly basis because I produce a particular program for teens. I'm noticing more and more teens and young adults, they are actually wanting to disconnect from the technology.
That's fascinating.
It really is.
I think they've developed these funny opposable thumbs that are designed for texting with one hand on a smartphone. You know, the millennials in particular are waking up to the fact that this is no longer your father's and your grandfather's world. They're waking up to radically different job prospects. Mm-hmm. And they're also kind of demanding a certain level of satisfaction in their work. When they can find work, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and it's no longer guaranteed. So, and this is the first generation that is probably going to be worse off than the preceding one.
Mm. I look back at my parents and their growing up. I had the great privilege of interviewing them for a non-broadcasted edition of this program that we talked for over an hour. Getting their insights on parenting, especially raising six kids and their levels of commitment and what it was that they wanted and where they are today in their 80s and so forth. And I look at that dynamic of the generations. When I was growing up, we had four generations alive. I had a great-grandmother, my grandparents, my parents, of course, and us. And then the first two passed on. Well, now I have a great niece, and my parents, who are the great grandparents of this niece, they're raising her. They're helping to raise her, I should say.
Wow.
And I look at her, although I can only see her in pictures. I have not actually met her in person. But my concern was, is she going to have a better future than my present as I see the future unfolding from a more materialistic standpoint? Is she going to have the same struggles and frustrations that many of us have who are tired of living from paycheck to paycheck,
Yes. Here I really have to leap in.
Go ahead.
Because we have to get out of this mindset where mm-hmm. we define a good life as material possessions.
Mm-hmm.
A good life is doing good in the world, having relationships, mm-hmm. having family, having a loving environment, being able to eat decent food, get clean water. I was listening to a report of a Syrian refugee in Greece this morning on OPB, and aid worker, Greek aid worker, said she was so sobered by a comment of one young girl that even with all of the economic disasters that Greece has gone through, this young girl saw her life as absolute paradise. Hmm. And particularly societies like the countryside societies in Greece and Italy and Spain and Latin America, where people get together and they make music, they laugh, they eat together. They may not have a lot of material goods, but they have a good quality of life because their communities are warm and supportive. This is what we need to get back to. Communities that pull together and provide the loving environment that is the very food and water and air that a young child needs to grow up strong and healthy and happy.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. It's very, very interesting to see the dynamics that are unfolding that I have been watching. And as I said before, some of these young people that I've come in contact with, and they're wanting to, again, disconnect from a lot of this other stuff, because what they're seeing is that that's not where real life happens, if you will, where real meaning in their existence is not in this technology. It's in the relationships that they are able to forge one-on-one, firsthand, or first person, if you will. And I just, again, I marveled at that. I'm going, wow, that's fantastic, because there are times when I just want to throw my cell phone into the ocean. I would not do that because it would not be good for the ocean, but the metaphor is where I'm coming from. And I'm sure that we all kind of go through that. It's like, oh my Lord, what am I going to, how do I get out of this box?
And do you know, Richard, it's so funny. There's actually an article in this latest issue of Wired magazine that talks about exactly that, unplugging from all your technology.
Mm. Well, I do try to do that on a more consistent basis, especially on the weekends. It's, you know, it's a little, it's not that hard even during the week, but on the weekends, it's a lot easier. It's one of the reasons why I actually went to, for example, the smartphone, because I'm able to accomplish more in a very short time and put it down and walk away from it. And matter of fact, as we're talking here, it was just this past weekend that I had the great joy of being outside, dismantling after, was it 4 years, dismantling our chicken run, because we're not using it anymore, and we needed to, you know, clear the area, clear the space. But I just felt so good. I was out there with the tall grasses and the oak trees and the soil, oh my goodness, the rich soil that I was walking through. And I have to say that I am very fortunate, very, very fortunate that I live where I do now, up above the city and in a rural area. And I know more and more people are feeling the same way. I mean, I'm seeing more of these television programs about people wanting to specifically go to Alaska and live in the wilderness, because that's where they feel at home now. But I don't think we have to do that. I don't think we have to move to Alaska.
Certainly not to Alaska.
No, but we can find those spaces right where we are now, right?
We can make our paradise wherever we are.
Yeah. And when we do that, are there ways that you have found to create that for yourself, for that to create that paradise as you speak of it?
One of the things that has come through so clearly from almost all of the interviews in the book is the value of going into silence. The value, whether it's through meditation, whether it's walking in nature, whether it's listening to music, but just carving out that space for yourself, closing down, as we were talking, the technologies and the distractions, and just being with yourself, and if you will, with your creator. And that also is recommended as the best way of developing your intuition. And what is the intuition but listening to that still small voice that's trying to communicate with you? It's being open to the signs that come through to you to help you along your way, whether it's the book that you're drawn to on the bookshelf or the proverbial I just interviewed Robert Moss, who has something called a book called Sidewalk Tarot, where he talks about going out into the street and just listening for snatches of conversation that you might hear walking in the street that might have meaning for you.
Oh, wow. It brings recollections of James Redfield's Celestine Prophecy.
Absolutely.
How he talks about we all have messages for one another.
Synchronicities.
Yeah. Fascinating. So tell me about the work that you do these days. I mean, you have the radio program and the publishing company. How did all of this how did you get in sync with all of this? How did all of this start for you?
Well, I was the proverbial left-brained corporate type. I jetted around the world being chief financial officer of a software company and CEO of another company, and ended up in England. And a friend of ours committed suicide. He was a name at Lloyd's. He was one of the underwriters of Lloyd's. And I don't know if you know how it works, but the people are kind of on the hook who are names at Lloyd's or members of the insurance syndicate to actually pay up if they need to. And he decided, no, he would be ruined, so he killed himself. Mm. Then he regretted it and started talking to my husband. Now, my husband was a lawyer and a merchant banker and was not prone to speaking to dead people. And, you know, once we got over these, are you going around the bend? Have you completely lost it? We started reading everything we could about these phenomena, you know, the woo-woo world, the paranormal world. And he started seeing things about people in the street. And in fact, he saved the life of a friend of his because he saw him at a crossroads between the hospital and the graveyard. And he said, you have to see a doctor right away. And the guy had three coronary arteries completely blocked and one partially blocked. So this really got our attention. And we started doing the, you know, what is life all about thing. Mm-hmm. And the more we studied and read and got into these sort of alternative groups of friends, the more we felt that we needed to be in professions where we give back to society instead of just taking. I mean, the banking world, he was a stockbroker. There's nothing more taking than that world. And so we both became healers. And then when we came to the United States, I found great difficulty in asking for payment for the healing that I did. So I ended up as publisher of a magazine. Mm.
That does seem to be a struggle for a lot of us in our service is asking for payment. And yet, you know, we needed to pay the electric bills to keep things going and on and on and on. And yet at the same time, I don't know about you, but when I first started in this business some 35 years ago, and someone would come to me and said, hey, could you help me produce this? And back then we used cassettes. Could you help me produce this cassette tape? And I would say, sure. And then we'd start talking about price. And I didn't want to price them out because I wanted to do the work. Mm-hmm. And yet when I would tell others, like my then wife or my family members, oh, yeah, and this is how much I'm making. I said, that's all? I mean, look at all you're doing. And so basically my philosophy, was at that time was I would rather do the work and get the little dollars than charge the big dollars and not get the work.
Yeah. And the other thing is, particularly in our field, is you just feel the importance of getting this kind of information out into the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely. You
know, payment is nice, but you're still going to do the work.
Yeah. I mean, I'm working right now on an audiobook for children, and I'm producing it. They asked me if I would be willing to do the artwork. And of course I did this for someone else's meditation CD several years ago. And I said, okay, sure. And it's taken a little time to put it all together. Finally did. And I have to say regardless of how little or how much I was paid, I look at this finished product and I'm going, wow, this is really nice. I'm very proud of and very happy to put this out there for this woman who's the author. And she's very happy with it too, mind you. I mean, I certainly, it's not just about me, but it's just, I'm excited about the prospects of people listening to this woman read her own book. Because she's the perfect voice in spite of the fact that she doesn't think that her voice fits. And I guess that's the other aspect of it, doing this work and working with different people and encouraging them to say, hey, no, this is this particular work that I'm helping you with. This is yours. You need to have your stamp on it, whatever that may be. And just really trying to build them up a little bit, help them and their self-esteem a little bit. because a lot of times we don't feel like what we've created is worthy, when in fact it is more, it's more than worthy.
You know, this is one of the biggest diseases of our society, this lack of self-esteem and self-love. And I, in fact, one of the interviewees in the book, Anita Morjani, wrote a book called Dying to Be Me, where she was admitted in a coma to hospital with stage 4 lymphatic cancer and died and you know, was told, no, she has to come back. When she came back, she actually was able to cure herself within days. She just had this knowing that she was perfect and that she just needed to love herself. And that, in fact, is her message to the reader in her book, is to love yourself. You already are everything that you're trying to attain. And you already know the truth within you. Stop giving your power away. Start believing that you deserve love and you are love.
Nick sort of reinforces a message that I've shared, and that is that we have the freedom of association and disassociation with those people and experiences and events and so forth that serve us. And a lot of times we stay connected with especially those individuals who aren't helping us in that regard. And sometimes it's hard to do, but sometimes you have to say, no more. I don't need to hear any more of those words. And
well, Anita has a really simple litmus test.
Mm-hmm.
You ask yourself, am I doing this because it will make me happy? It'll make me happy to help someone. It'll make me feel good or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or am I doing this because I am fearful of the consequences?
Oh, wow.
They won't love me if I don't do it.
Wow. Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. We're talking with Miriam Knight. She is the, should I call you the co-editor? Of this work,
yeah.
This particular book,
yeah.
What Wags the World, Tales of Conscious Awakening. And then, of course, you have the publishing company, you have the magazine, the newsletters, all of the different things, the radio show. You're quite diversified, but all of this didn't happen overnight.
No, I've been working at it for 15 years.
And it's quite an exciting endeavor, I'm sure. And I'm curious as to some of the surprises that you come across from day to day or week to week. I mean, are you surprised every day by something that happens?
Well, I think what I'm excited more than I'm surprised.
Okay.
Because I'm excited to see people everywhere waking up in unusual ways. And that was one of the fun parts of the book. Somebody like Suzanne Giesman, she was a military, she was the one of the highest ranking officers in the U.S. Navy. She was a commander, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she and her husband lost their daughter, stepdaughter,
mm-hmm.
and she went to a medium and got fascinated because the medium told her things that she could not possibly have known, and started going into it, and eventually went to a class where she was writing a book about mediumship. And then the medium who was teaching the class turned to her and said, now you give readings. And she proceeded to give readings to everybody in the room and discovered that she was a medium too.
Oh, wow.
Another guy, Howard Falco, a businessman, Wall Street broker, I mean, he had it all, you know, the fancy lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. And he wasn't happy. And he didn't know why he wasn't happy. He was looking for something else.
Mm.
And he just kind of, I don't know, had an internal hissy fit with the universe. And got this download of what the meaning of life was. I mean, it happens in different ways for different people. But what I am saying is, you know, a lot of people will look back at their life and say, oh yeah, I had this experience then, but they don't know how to slot it into their reality. And so they kind of hide it under the rug. And it's only later that they start seeing the meaning in it.
Yeah.
So what I want people to do is to acknowledge that the world can be a beautiful place for you if you just let it. Allow the love into your life. Allow the universe to help you. You have such a team of angels and loved ones around you all the time. They're just waiting to help you. But it's like the old joke, you know, meet them halfway, buy the lottery ticket. No, I am not suggesting that people buy the lottery ticket. That was just the joke.
Mm-hmm.
But get out there, open yourself to these experiences, open yourself to the beauty of the world, love the world, love yourself, start with yourself, and then the world will come to you.
You know, it reminds me of something that Foster Gamble, who is also one of the contributors, shared with us. He's been on our program as well, and it makes me think of his motion picture, Thrive, which is what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now, no, I don't want to survive anymore. I want to thrive.
Absolutely.
I want to be able to get up every morning, and there's no reason why we have to wait on this, but I want to be able to get up every morning excited about going and doing the things that I love to do and not even be concerned about being able to put food on the table and power in the power lines and so forth. That it's almost like I just want that to be a given. It's done. That's taken care of. And I'm just going to be exuberant and excited about and deal with the challenges, the incredible challenges that life has to offer in this experience.
You know, we were talking about the waves of books that come through, and you've had Foster Gamble. I've had this kind of peak wave of books on the law of attraction.
Yes.
You know, how to manifest things in your life.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites recently was something called Manifesting 1, 2, 3, and You Don't Need Three.
Yes, Ken Elliott.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, the secret of all of this is your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Get your thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
Get your thinking positive. Everything in the world is the result of somebody's thought process. Whether it's art or technology or science or mathematics or biology, somebody had to conceive it before it could be made and manifested.
Mm-hmm.
So get your thinking right. Think positively about what you want and see it as, dream it into existence. Dream it, feel it, that it's already there for you. And that is half the battle. Instead of always focusing on what you don't have, instead of focusing on your pain, on your lack,
mm-hmm.
focus on the positive, the love that you have in the world. Shine that light, and that's what you'll attract.
Mm. I love it. I absolutely love it. And of course, the list of people that you have put together in this particular work called What Wags the World, many of the folks have been on our program and certainly on your program and elsewhere and been sharing their ideas, their thoughts, their concepts, their paradigms, if you will, whatever term you want to use. And I think that one of the things that I mentioned earlier in the program about this country's preoccupation with individualism, and that, and I've gotten caught up in it myself, that I did this. There's this, I watch these television programs, and at the end they run off the whoever the production house was. And they have this one kid, this little kid, the voice, that I did this. Well, there's some truth to that. But at the same time, what I did was a compilation of all of the influences that I've had in my life. Yes, I had to carry out the actions to create, for example, this interview by making the phone calls, da da da. But I had to communicate, and then the connections had to be made, and on and on and on. You know, and I'm very grateful to the various inventors of all of the technologies that we're using right now. And so there's a certain element of this was a group effort.
And don't forget that you are a gift to other people as well.
Right, not wanting to discount, right.
Exactly. I mean, you play a role in every other person's life. And there's this concept of soul group, that we kind of come into this life together and we have various roles that we play off each other to give the support for our learning, for our spiritual growth.
This has been just an extraordinary hour, and I am very grateful for your time and energy in what you are doing, as well as the work that we're talking about here on the program, What Wags the World, Tales of Conscious Awakening. And though you're not terribly far away, and who knows, maybe I'll be heading in that direction one of these days, but should you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to talk further about this.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. If I could just give a shout out to my website, it's ncreview.com. That's for New Consciousness Review.
ncreview.com is the website. And before we let you go, as I mentioned at the front end of our program, we have three questions that we ask at the end of each program. And the reason I use the term we is because, I don't know about you, but I don't ask the questions. The universe asks the questions. I'm just long for the ride. That's how I put it. But the three questions that I have for you, starting off with, who is Miriam Knight?
A messenger.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
If I can help people open their hearts and minds to how we are all connected, interconnected, our responsibility for each other and for the planet, and to remove the fear that we have of passing into, you know, from this life, really focus on the joy that you bring into the life rather than the things that you bring into it.
And who inspires you?
I think my greatest inspiration is from small children, toddlers, with the light and excitement in their eyes about looking at the world with fresh eyes and wonder. That's what excites me.
And that website, one more time for the review, it's NC Review.
ncreview.com for New Consciousness Review.
Yeah. ncreview.com. Also, whatwagstheworld.com if you're interested in checking out the book as well. I'm curious, is there a link on that website, What Wags the World, to the NC Review website?
Do you know, Richard, I don't think there is. I'm going to go put one on right now.
Okay, very good. And again, Miriam, thank you again so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me, Richard. It was a delight.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.